Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
HBO has the new Bernie Madoff movie. The trailer in part sounds like this.
For 16 years, I kept this secret from my wife, my brother, my sons. That I was able to do that and maintain any degree of sanity. That worries me when I think about it.
Mom, do you understand what he's done?
I just want to know what's going on.
There's a 17th floor.
You're asking me how I didn't know.
What's going on?
How did you not know?
What did you do with the money?
We're here to find out if there's an innocent explanation.
There is no innocent explanation.
He looks like Bernie Madoff. The thing just looks gripping. It'll turn your stomach if you pause and think, oh, it's true. And lives were ruined by Bernie Madoff. And if you read Diana Henriques's book, Wizard of Lies, you know that it's just a fantastic story, which begins with her being the first person outside of his attorneys to meet him in jail and talk to him about why he did what he did. The book is worth the read without the movie, but now you got them both. And Diana joins us again on WGN Radio. Diana, it's John Williams. Welcome back. How have you been?
I've been well, John, and thank you so much. Those were riveting segments that you aired there.
Have you seen the movie?
I have. I was at the premiere in New York on Thursday night. It's amazing. It really is just amazing how De Niro so completely transforms himself into Bernie Madoff in a way, John, that really helps you understand how people fell under the spell of this dangerous sociopath.
7 o'clock HBO Saturday night. 7 o'clock on HBO Saturday night. Is it true to the book?
Yes, it is amazingly faithful. I was a consultant to HBO as part of the arrangement, legal arrangements for adapting the book. And frankly, John, I thought it was going to be kind of a pro forma, you know, arrangement where HBO kind of gives me a consulting contract and pats me on the head and says, nice little author, go away and be quiet. But in fact, I was deeply involved and consulted through the script construction process, even in some of the set design questions. And my feedback was always respected and taken seriously. I am very, very pleased with how the story has been adapted.
Okay, I'm interested. I only know it by the book, and I think that's fantastic. Start with what year did Bernie Madoff go down?
He was arrested on December 11th, 2008.
2008. So let's just sort of back up, Diana. What happened? What did Bernie Madoff do?
Well, he had begun his career, John, as a up-and-coming young one-man show trading over-the-counter stocks back in 1960 when, you know, anybody with a pulse could make money on OTC stocks, but he had more than a pulse. He had a real brain and a real talent for it. On the side, he started managing money for friends and family. That side business slowly grew, and then at some point, and we're not really sure, I think it was certainly by the mid-80s, Bernie denies that and says it wasn't until 1993, that private side of his business became a Ponzi scheme, and it grew into the largest Ponzi scheme in history. It stretched around the world from Palm Beach to the Persian Gulf. People from, you know, glittery Hollywood celebrities down to Carpenter Union pensioners lost money in this massive fraud when it collapsed. And the paradox is that all through that time, the Bernie Madoff I knew on Wall Street was running one of the most respected wholesale trading firms on the street, had a squeaky clean regulatory record, admired, respected by everybody. It was like Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde.
In other words, that legitimate business existed at the same time that the illegitimate one did.
It did. It ran in like a parallel universe, really.
Was he using the one to fund the other or cover the other?
Well, not initially. I mean, his wholesale trading business was really very successful until the advent of decimalization, when changes in stock prices began to be calculated in smaller and smaller fractions. And at that point, the legitimate firm came under some profit pressure. And in the very final years of the fraud, he began to channel money from his Ponzi slush fund into the legitimate business, masquerading it, or masking it as profits from his investment management side.
Wow.
So as the money came in, he funneled it. His henchman, Frankie DiPasquale, channeled it through their London office, so it would come in to the legitimate firm looking like profits from that private side of the business into the legitimate trading firm. But that was a development fairly late in the fraud, John.
Was it his idea all along to operate a Ponzi scheme and not operate it legitimately, or was he simply making bad trades and now he needed to cover for them?
I don't think we'll ever know the honest answer to that. There was an incident I describe in my book that occurred in 1962. John, you'll recall, there was that May 1962, what they call the air pocket drop in the market. It was the worst week in the market since 1929. And Bernie had only maybe a couple of dozen private investors at that point, but they were wiped out in the first hours of that crash. He'd put them, you know, these small-time savers, he'd put them in these wildly speculative stocks, and he lost all their money for them. Well, what did he do? He could have admitted what had happened and admitted the losses and admitted he had failed, or he could have covered all their losses secretly out of his own pocket and lied about it, and that's what he did. So clearly there is a facet of Bernie Madoff's personality that cannot admit failure. So I think as long as he could make money honestly, as long as he could be a hero money manager, a genius on Wall Street, honestly, he'd do that. But if he had to choose between cheating and failing, he'd cheat.
And if somebody thought, well, at least that's admirable, but it's not admirable if he's doing it with the next investor's money, making it sound like I've got a profitable concern here. You put money in, but now the money coming in is funding the losses or the exits for other people. And now you've got a Ponzi scheme on your hands. Yes. Did he think, though, okay, but someday I'm going to get upright on this thing and then I won't have to do that anymore?
I think he did. He says he did. And, of course, you know, when you think about it, a Ponzi scheme is the opposite of a perfect crime. I mean, there are a few ways out of a Ponzi scheme besides, you know, suicide in prison. I mean, it's just really hard to get out of them. So if you know, he must rationally have thought that he would be able to make enough money at some point to pay back the money he'd stolen to cover other withdrawals, so that he could make people whole. But it became impossible as more and more billions of dollars poured into this fund.
Did his wife or sons know?
My conviction is that they did not. That is the conclusion I reached in my book after almost 2 years of research. It is a conclusion that has held up in the test of time. Not one post-it note has surfaced in all of the investigations, all of the bankruptcy trustees' investigations. Nothing has surfaced that implicates Ruth or either of the two Madoff sons. And certainly that is the story that is portrayed in the HBO drama.
She didn't go to jail. She was not pressed. There were no charges against her, right?
Never. Never. She was almost immediately given innocent spouse status by the IRS. As their investigation into Madoff's tax liabilities expanded, neither of the sons were ever the target or the subject of a criminal investigation.
Yeah.
We confirmed that fairly early in the drama.
How was Ruth living then? It's tragic what's happened to this family, because one of their sons committed suicide, right?
On the second anniversary of his father's arrest, he committed suicide.
And the other son?
The other son died of cancer in September 2014.
Can you imagine?
It was a form of cancer he had beaten a decade earlier. he had fought it off as a much younger as a younger man, and he told me soon after his diagnosis in early 2013 that he felt that the stress of his father's scandal had left him vulnerable to a recurrence of the disease, and an opportunistic infection
How is Ruth living then? Does she live comfortably, or is she a pauper now?
Well, not a pauper. She is essentially on an allowance from the trustee as they work towards a final settlement in the litigation he has filed against her. She was left a portion of her assets, about $2.5 million, by the bank, by the U.S. Attorney's Office, by the Justice Department. The trustee has sued her for $44 million, which she transparently doesn't have. So she has a potential liability that leaves her far, far in debt. But she is working, her attorneys are working towards eventually a settlement of that case. Mm-hmm. She's living quietly in a private community in Greenwich in a house that she rents. She doesn't own the home. And it's not clear once the litigation is cleared up what she will do. So she's, but you know, she's sustained by loving grandchildren who take beautiful care of her. And she obviously isn't happy with all of this new publicity.
Yeah, I'll bet. Let me ask you one last question, Diane. I've got 45 seconds. How many people and how many dollars were affected by the Bernie Madoff scheme?
Well, the cash losses are relatively easy to estimate, John. They were about $17 to $20 billion in cash was lost.
Any idea how many people that touched?
You know, I have seen an estimate that ran as high as 3 million people worldwide. Now, that includes the grant recipients from charities that had to close their doors, the pensioners of union pension funds. So it could be that. We have documented at almost 10,000 people. So at least thousands, possibly millions.
On HBO, Saturday night at 7 o'clock, Wizard of Lies, the title of your book, Diana Enriquez's book, is worth a read. I presume I can still get this at bookstores everywhere, Diana?
You can get it with Robert De Niro and Michelle Pfeiffer's photos on the front.
That's a good day for you.
It's a beautiful new cover.
Nice to talk to you. Congratulations once again.
Thank you. Thanks again.